hosts here with me, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hi.
And our returning, recurring guest and co-host of Costume Couture, Ian of House of Turner Cosplay.
Good evening, everybody.
Wow. We are Screen Heroes. Voice. So we are going to be talking mostly about Wonder Woman tonight. Lots of spoilers and things like that for the new Wonder Woman live action film.
Absolutely. Wonder Woman.
Before we get into that, we'll do a little bit of news. But before we get into that, if anything sounds different to anybody, things are a little bit different. We are now being hosted by Blog Talk Radio, which is really cool and very exciting. Gamer Heroes launched on that last week. And so Screen Heroes now has caught up with that. So if things sound a little different, that would be why. And it gives us a chance to reach more people and kind of expand our listener base, hopefully, and get some new listeners. So if you are new to the show, welcome. Welcome to our show. And comment on, you know, Facebook and Twitter. We're at Heroes Podcasts and heroespodcasts.com.
Absolutely.
That's it.
All right, guys. News. What's up first? Ryan, you want to talk a bit about Ghostbusters? That's your thing. Sure. I mean, you're even wearing the shirt, so.
We thought we were done with the Ghostbusters for a little while, but no, Dan Aykroyd cannot let it die. And that's why we loved him, but now it's not why people love him. People are being very mean to him lately. Of course, he's also being mean to people, so it's kind of a, you know, back and forth relationship right now. Yeah. But he was at probably a vodka event or something, I don't know, and he was talking
about... For the record, he's not like an alcoholic, he makes Crystal Skull vodka.
Yeah, I think it's called Crystal Head, but it is a Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
Made from alien skulls, of course.
Alien skulls, yeah, basically, from the movie, the Crystal Skull, obviously, is what he based it on.
Obviously.
Well, I mean, it works two ways, right? Because you can make fun of the fourth Indiana Jones, and you can also talk about how Dan Aykroyd is a little obsessed with alien life.
He does love alien life and ghosts.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was at an event and somebody asked him about the new Ghostbusters and he basically said something to the effect of, we told Paul Feig to do things this way. He didn't do it this way. Then we ended up having to do it that way anyway and we spent $30 to $40 million on reshoots and he won't be back on the Sony lot anytime soon.
Which I found hilarious. He said that. I'm like, you don't have control over that.
Yeah, Dan Aykroyd is... You have to remember the time period he came out of. It's not the time period we're in now, and he's still acting kind of like it is. So then Sony came back and said the reshoots only cost like $3 or $4 million, and yeah, so you're lying or something like that.
Exaggerating to make a point.
And then he came back and said that he thought the movie was great, but that he thought that they should have gone back to leaned on the original.
The originators.
Or the originators, I think. Yeah, that was the term he used.
It's a loan or something. Like,
and he said he felt really bad for the women in the movie because they would probably never get to reprise their role as Ghostbusters because the movie cost so much to make and Sony was not going to move forward with the sequel. So.
That's a nice thing. You know, I'm sure all four of those women signed on thinking they were going to be part of a growing franchise and... You could tell that all four of them really wanted to be there, that the four of them had chemistry together.
And they loved playing those roles.
They seemed like they had a lot of fun. So to hear that kind of sucks. And that's probably the most factual thing Dan Aykroyd said throughout that whole thing, is that they are not going to get to do what they want to do.
Well, there's been a history of that kind of stuff with this movie. When it first got announced that it was going to be female Ghostbusters, Ernie Hudson came out and said, this movie is going to fail, it's going to be terrible. No one wants to see that. And then, like, a month later, he came out and said, guys, this movie's going to be great.
Because they put him in it.
Exactly. Yeah. They started paying him and said, you can't say that stuff anymore. And so, his tune completely changed. And so, there's been a history of that kind of stuff with that movie. And
though, to be fair, if we look at just the last, you know, year or so, Ghostbusters is not the only franchise to try to revive itself and not do so well at the box office.
No, but it probably went the furthest away from at least the very core values. I'm not talking about four women. I'm talking about the style of comedy and the style of movie that was done.
I mean, I think an argument could be made for Power Rangers. You know, I think that... Because that movie did very poorly. It only raked in $140
million. Well, I'm not talking about box office. I'm talking about just, like, in terms of, like, the actual concept of the thing. It kind of... I don't know. It felt like...
They hit really hard on the whole you have to trust each other thing.
They did. They did, yeah.
You know, but...
And they didn't know martial arts until they magically picked up... Oh, one of them did or something, you know.
We're not talking Power
Rangers. Yeah, no, good point. But yeah, this is...
It's not always easy to revive a franchise, especially to do it with a new twist or a new style for a new audience.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, the revivals are either mediocre to good films, but because they're reviving so much over and over and over again, they're not doing very well.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy Ghostbusters. I enjoyed Power Rangers. Were they amazing films? Absolutely not. Did I get my money's worth? I feel like I did. But, I mean, they failed at the box office. King Arthur failed at the box office. Pirates of the Caribbean failing at the box office right now.
Yeah.
I mean, unless overseas it's doing really well in Europe, apparently. But here, not so much. So, I just feel like maybe an audience is done with revivals and reboots, and we'd rather see new content.
Mm-hmm. Well, to support your perspective there, The Mummy, which is coming out this coming weekend here, because we're recording on a Tuesday night,
yeah.
Is projected only for $35 million for the opening weekend.
It's gone down because of Wonder Woman.
And Wonder Woman, like, when it was low... It was 60.
Yeah.
That was low. Right. Yeah. Now the Mummies are supposed to launch this whole new dark universe, mm-hmm. and they're projecting 35. Now,
well, you're talking about a DC superhero movie versus
a
movie that...
You're paying Tom Cruise.
Right, but also the last movie that was called The Mummy was a Brendan Fraser, Fraser movie in the 90s. So.
Which I love that movie, too.
Sure, that movie was probably better than this one will be. I haven't seen it.
It was definitely more tongue-in-cheek than what's going to happen here.
Oh, for sure.
I just think that there's... It's tough to compare those two.
I'm not drawing a direct comparison. I'm just saying that you have a movie starring Tom Cruise where, you know, of course, his name tends to be larger than the title on the posters.
Yeah.
You're paying him good money, just like Marvel does with Robert Downey Jr. You have to cover that expense to have Tom Cruise in your movie. And 35 is just not... That's not a good number for something that's supposed to launch a cinematic universe. Which
maybe the overseas market will do better, but...
Maybe.
They always usually tend to... Overseas gets a lot of good box office results.
Depending on the genre, I mean, Warcraft did very well in China. If we ever get a sequel, it's going to be because of China, you know, so that's possible. Speaking of the Dark Universe, though, that's what we're going to talk about next week.
Yes.
We are going to fan cast the uncasted characters for that Dark Universe.
There's quite a few when you think about it. Today they just released a list of their plans and what is ideally being thrown around, including cast members they would love to include, as well as adapting both Hunchback of Notre Dame and Phantom of the Opera. I'm against one and for the other, so you can figure that out on your own.
So what other news do we have, guys?
Marvel is launching two brand new TV series, a new Spider-Man to take over for Ultimate Spider-Man, and a new Avengers one.
Cartoons, I assume?
They are cartoons. Disney Toon featured three, Ultimate Spider-Man, Avengers Assemble, and Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians is the newest, so it's continuing. The other two are being rebranded into these shows. They're going to pretty much copy what's going on in the movies right now and the comics. So the Avengers is called Avengers Secret Wars, and it's going to focus on the newer team, Black Panther, Captain Marvel, Ms. Marvel, saving the older team we're familiar
with.
That's
cool. Okay.
A lot of people give Marvel crap for not having good animation. They don't have good animated movies like DC does. Absolutely not. But I really like their TV shows. Mm. I've followed Ultimate Spider-Man and Avengers Assemble for quite a few years now. And they're really good. So I'm going to give these new shows a chance, but they have promo videos online if you want to take a look.
So are they now considered canon within the
whole
universe?
A lot of the cards ones are.
For Ultimate Spider-Man and Avengers Assemble, if you wanted to know what was going to happen in the movies, they spoiled it actually in the shows first and to see how it went. Nothing giant, but they would introduce the characters sooner. Like Black Panther got introduced a lot sooner than he did in here, and Captain Marvel's been in it for a while, so it's you can kind of see a direction. It doesn't like spoil big stuff.
Gotcha. But,
you can see the direction they're going, so it's a good way to catch up on some stuff before the new Tom Holland movie comes out.
Mm-hmm. That's in July.
Mm-hmm.
Also in Marvel news, Iron Fist Season 2 started filming today.
No, Luke Cage.
Luke Cage Season 2 started filming today.
No way.
Luke Cage. I misspoke. Luke Cage Season 2.
How dare you make a mistake, today. Derek?
Are you guys surprised it's already filming?
I didn't like Luke Cage that much.
Not an answer to the question, but all right.
I could care less really if Luke Cage is going or not.
I honestly didn't know it had a season two. That news just escaped me. So
I guess they're done with Jessica Jones.
They're still filming Jessica Jones right now because she was just about on set.
Well, that was like 2 days ago. I guess they're probably
filming them together. That seems
they're either filming together or Jessica Jones is in Luke Cage.
Yeah.
Let's hope Iron Fist is in Luke Cage. And, yeah, they're kind of leaning on that relationship.
Absolutely.
That we hope is good, because we haven't even seen that it's good. I'm just guessing based on comic books.
Totally should.
All right, well, let's move on then to our main topic here. Wonder Woman, the movie, Gal Gadot.
Oh, it was so good.
Quick rundown of the box office, because I like doing that stuff. Originally projected, they were looking at, as the hype grew, to $95 million for opening weekend. It ended up beating those numbers. Pulling in about 101 domestically opening weekend, just the opening weekend itself. Internationally, about $224 million. To date, it's at 115 and 240, so really big numbers. Number one at the box office by a huge margin, almost about quadruple of what Captain Underpants did in its opening weekend, which was well above all the other films. It came in as the fifth best superhero origin opening weekend behind Suicide Squad, Deadpool, Man of Steel, and Spider-Man, which means that it beat out
Spider-Man,
the original Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. It rounds out the top five, or the only five origin stories to break $100 million opening weekend. Iron Man came in at 98 and change. And then it's 15th overall in all superhero comic book adaptation movies. 15th for opening weekend. That includes all the big ensemble stuff. So that includes
Avengers
and Guardians of the Galaxy and Civil War and all that stuff.
Stuff like that, yeah.
So pretty big numbers for the character. To see that it came in fifth, I mean, it beat out every Batman movie. It beat out every MCU movie that was an origin story.
This is great. I love that.
Which is pretty crazy. I know a lot of people are comparing June numbers. I don't really think that that's fair because Marvel's never really done a June release for their MCU films.
Yeah.
And if you take out the MCU in the conversation, I feel like it's an unbalanced conversation. But those are some huge numbers to be top five like that.
Absolutely.
It's really, I mean, if you think about it, it's really top four because Suicide Squad is essentially an ensemble film.
Yeah. It is an ensemble film.
So how do you guys want to kick this one off? Do you want to dive right into characters, plots?
Well, maybe we should give a non-spoilered review and then dive into
spoilers after.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we already kind of did that.
We did a quick rundown, yeah,
you can catch it on our YouTube channel. Go to heroespodcast.com, click on the YouTube link.
We got to see the movie first thing almost 2 weeks ago, and it was a very cool experience for all of us. We all had a lot of fun. We did a quick video afterwards, and that kind of blew up for us. That was cool.
Yeah, that was our most popular video.
6,500 people wanted to tell me how crappy my opinion
That's
is.
That's not true. Only like 20. yeah, I mean, it was an exciting movie. It was fun. It was very emotional throughout most of it. Technically, I thought it was really well done. I want to dive into spoilers, so that's probably all I can really say at this point. Does anybody have anything they'd like to add or contradict?
It gets a lot of back and forth with the arguments because people are claiming it's a perfect film. And the thing is, nothing's perfect. It has a few plot holes. It has a few technical issues that are to be expected with just about every film. We're not in the heyday of CGI perfection. We're almost there, but it's not quite there yet. And I just want to say, like, as probably the biggest Wonder Woman fan at this table, you can love something and recognize the flaws it has. You can love it in spite of those. You can love it because of those. It doesn't make you less than a fan, and it would be a disservice as us as fans and critics to not look at it with a clear eye. We can't go into every film with rose-colored glasses anymore. That's just not how this works. We've been doing this podcast way too long.
Yeah.
To be able to enjoy that. And some days we wish we could do that again. Yeah. But
That part's definitely true. I do miss the days where I didn't notice the small technical issues with the movie. Because I didn't. You know, all through high school, I never would have noticed these things. But now, you know, I see 12, 16 movies a year in theaters, and I'm looking for that stuff now.
Yeah.
So editing was never something I cared about when I was, you know, 17. So
I just want to give that brief rundown. It's definitely me on my soapbox, but I love this movie. And I can still sit there and say, you know what, here, 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 and here, this could have been different, and it might have been better. No proof of that, but just to prep everybody, because we are going to be both praising and critiquing.
Mm-hmm. So you guys want to dive in then?
Yes, let's do spoilers.
Absolutely.
All right, so at this point forward, if you haven't seen Wonder Woman and you care about the details, this is the spoiler zone. So you're going to want to pause this and come back later. Go see the movie anyway, because it's certainly not a bad movie. I think we can all agree on that. So it's worth seeing if you like superheroes, you like comic books, you like Gal Gadot. Go see the movie. Let's kick things off. Let's start with Gal. What did you guys think of her and her portrayal of Diana Prince?
Oh, it was so good. I mean, we got a little taste of it in Batman v Superman. She had a total of, like, I think 5 minutes of screen time as Wonder Woman, so it's whatever. But, you know, with my Wonder Woman, I grew up with Susan Eisenberg as Wonder Woman, and she's the voice of Wonder Woman in the Justice League cartoons, the Injustice games. Now, I, like, cannot picture Wonder Woman without a Greek accent. I cannot picture her without Gal Gadot's accent. So, I mean, I think Gal brings a very refreshing take on the character, especially how she played her in this movie versus Batman v Superman, because in Batman v Superman, she's been in man's world since World War I. So,
I apologize to anybody listening to this live. Just got like a tickle. I'm trying to get past it.
But, I mean, I think that she is for sure the best choice for Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I think she's a really good example of why I need to stop caring so much about casting choices ahead of time. When they cast Heath Ledger as the Joker, I thought that was a terrible idea.
For the record, I was totally on board.
Okay. I thought it was a terrible idea because I had really only seen him in A Knight's Tale by that point, and I was not expecting him to be able to pull it off. And obviously, he did an absolutely incredible job. So I was wrong there. I was certainly wrong about Gal Gadot. She was a lesser-known actor at the time of her casting, aside from Fast and the Furious.
That was about it.
Yeah. And she had even thought about quitting acting and things like that. So for me, it didn't seem like a good fit. I could not have been more wrong.
Oh, yeah.
So she's absolutely wonderful. I now can't picture Wonder Woman without the accent.
Yeah.
Without a Mediterranean accent, right? It almost seems like how could they have missed that before? it feels so perfect from that standpoint.
Well, the issue is, beforehand, we were looking at Wonder Woman as an American woman, as opposed to a woman of the world. And now, you know, she uses her real voice. That's her Israeli Tel Aviv accent. That's not a specific Greek accent.
Yeah.
But, you know, she was told not to change it. So I think it works really well for the character. And it does make her more worldly, less just American. Because this hero is for everyone. It's not just for America. And, I mean, that's part of the backlash that she's had, but Wonder Woman, the film, has had quite a bit of backlash.
Yeah.
That's one of the sillier ones.
It always confused me, though, because in the cartoons, at least, and in the comic books, she wasn't really portrayed as the American hero the way Cap or Superman are.
Right.
No.
She's from a Greek island. Her powers come from Greek gods. You know?
Yes.
It never occurred to me that she was supposed to be American. It just, she fought with American heroes.
I mean, I kind of pictured her, you know, being American just because she has, you know, the stars and the
red
and
white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know,
Yeah, I guess I just assumed we didn't necessarily own those things, so just...
No, you're totally right. Yeah. Tons and tons of countries you starred. So.
Yeah, and the same three colors that we do, you know. So
it could have been French. Who knows?
Right, yeah. That's totally possible. Ryan, what about you?
Regardless of her accent, since apparently that's what we went into and talking about right? her as a character. I think that she's not a great actress, but I think that Patty Jenkins... I'm going to make this comparison. It's not really fair to Gal. I don't mean it as harsh as it is, but like T2 or Terminator, either of those movies, when Arnold Schwarzenegger is playing a cyborg, like James Cameron knew his acting range and put him in a position that made him look really good. And I think Patty Jenkins did that with Gal. She had the charisma for sure. Like she did everything right. I just think that she's still fairly fresh in the acting world, especially in like really big blockbusters,
focal roles.
Yeah. So yeah, she was great. I really love her as Wonder Woman. I think that the movie played to her strengths. The physicality, I think, was most of it. You know, the fight scenes all look very good. Anything that was more physical humor, you know, the scene where she's, you know, getting dressed in all these dresses and like moving around and stuff. I thought that all played out very well to her, and like the fish out of water played very well to someone who maybe is not as strong an actor as like Ben Affleck, you know, or somebody that's been doing it for, you know, 30 years.
And I think that might even say something more about the strengths of Patty Jenkins, who was the director, because if you don't know your actor's strengths, if you don't understand what they can and can't do, you're going to end up with some really awkward scenes and poorly forced dialogue.
Which, honestly, if you look back at Ben Affleck's first few movies, especially the Kevin Smith ones, where he's best friends and was living on Kevin Smith's couch at the time, like, his lines came across awkward because he was giving them as he would to his friend and not as that character. So, obviously, there's room for growth.
Sure, yeah. And Ben Affleck, of course, has changed a great deal as an actor. If you look at, you know, a movie like Argo, versus Daredevil, right?
Or Mallrats.
Daredevil
was his fault.
But Daredevil is not his fault. We've said that on the show.
You have to go a little further back than that.
I do blame a lot of it, though, on Colin Farrell. That was that was just unnecessary acting.
I thought from a persona perspective, from her presence on the screen, I thought really sold the role to me.
Yeah, I mean, but I think a lot of that was more because of Patty Jenkins than it was because of her. Because I mean,
so you didn't feel this way during BVS?
I thought,
like, I know it didn't really
of her were good with BVS. There was parts where I was like, it was kind of cringy for me. Like when she first comes down and she's, you know, it's Wonder Woman. I think a lot of it at the time was, holy moly, we're getting Wonder Woman on the big screen. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. And the music, you can't help but get hyped. But when you go back and watch it, I've gone back and I watched the extended cut and I've watched the movie a few more times. And it kind of lost the luster for me a little bit.
Fair enough.
Because it's not as new anymore and not as, you know, holy moly. You know, I keep saying that because that's my favorite phrase, apparently. But I don't want to say something that I can't say on a PG podcast. But I think that she's improved since BVS. I hope it doesn't come across that I'm really, like, being super critical of her. I think that she's going to keep growing. I think this movie is going to do wonders for her, and she's going to get those opportunities to grow like some other actors have. I think she's going to be big for a while.
Well, since her casting in BVS, she's already gotten two other movies. One's a comedy, and one was an action film. So it's...
Which one am I forgetting?
There was Keeping Up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
And there was another one. Let me find that.
I'm forgetting the other one. I was just curious.
But she's getting more opportunities to expand and do new things, which is something that a lot of actresses, women in particular, they don't get. They're put in a role and that's it. And, you know, a lot of men, they get their chances to broaden their horizons, but some male actors like Tom Cruise and Liam Neeson, they stick to what they're good at. So... You know,
Tom Cruise's role in Tropic Thunder is pretty amazing.
That
is hilarious.
But Gal's getting the opportunity to try new things. Yeah. So that's incredible, too.
I do have to say that she does have the advantage of a really great soundtrack for her character. Her theme is just really good and exciting, you know? The Ben Affleck Batman doesn't really have much of one, and Superman's is a little more slow and melodic, and you know, Wonder Woman's is very like electric guitar and intense, and that definitely increases the hype of a scene when that's brought into things. So She has that advantage.
Criminal with Kevin Costner.
Oh, I didn't realize she was in that. I didn't see that one. What did you guys think of Chris Pine as Steve Trevor?
Captain Kirk in the
That's exactly what I said.
I saw it more after you mentioned that before we saw it the second time. And when I went back and I watched it the second time with you guys, I was like, okay. I mean, I can see it a little bit more. I mean, it was fine because it worked in this movie. I don't think that it wasn't a detriment at all. His humor, he has a specific type of humor that he does well, and he just went to that, and that's fine. I thought it was well done. I mean, Steve Trevor, for me, was not a really important character. I'm not as big of a Wonder Woman fan as everybody else at this table, probably, but, you know, so they could have cast almost anybody, and I would have been fine with it. He's a good actor, so, I mean, he did great. I didn't have any problem with it.
Chris Pine, they went to him, and they were like, here's all of our available roles in the DC Universe. Pick one. Because they loved him so much, and because he's just a really cool guy, he picked the only male damsel out there. And now, looking back on it, yeah, he probably didn't want to be tied to a franchise for another 10 years, because he is already tied to Star Trek. But
assuming there's another movie.
But at the same time, I thought he played it really well. And my favorite moments of him was when he did his best to believe Diana. He never once told her that her theories are stupid. Yeah. Like, he doubted her internally, and he played that fairly well, but he was never going to disrespect her and say that, and I thought that was pretty cool as the character.
I figured your favorite scene was the nakedness scene.
I learned he wasn't really naked.
He wasn't?
He was wearing a red Speedo that they photoshopped out later.
Well, that's lame.
Yeah. There's a whole article with the cinematographer and stuff because that scene was very hard to film, to light it correctly in a way that looked realistic.
It did look dark.
Yeah. They wanted it to be very dark and lit natural, but they didn't want like candles everywhere because that's kind of the stereotypical thing to do.
Right.
So it was a difficult scene to do, and they were talking about it, and they had asked Chris Pine as well about that particular scene and how he felt being naked in front of everybody, and
he was not. I'm fine.
Well, no, he said he might as well have been. The Speedo was very small, he said, but he was wearing something.
I like that exchange, though, that, like...
It is. It's very
funny. It's a fun scene.
The thing is, like, the two of them had a really good chemistry together.
Yeah.
So that was great. Their conversations back and forth were fun to watch.
Well, I think either of them would have good chemistry with a rock by themselves. Like, and then you put them together, and of course they're going to have good chemistry.
They're really both charismatic.
Yeah, they're both super charismatic.
It's true. Very charming. Yeah.
How did you guys feel about his death?
He had to die.
Absolutely.
It made sense.
It had
but
to happen.
But the way it happened, do you think that they...
Like self-sacrifice, typical, you know, save the world?
Mm-hmm. I think it kind of took some of the... I don't know, the glory away from Wonder Woman, because, I mean, we'll get into it later, but the third act and the whole fight scene at the end was kind of silly, in my opinion, and maybe you guys disagree, but I thought that his self-sacrifice was super heroic, and that she just got in, like, a fist fight with a dude that has a really weird mustache. And, you know,
yeah. And we're going to talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I thought that his ending was better than her ending, and that's unfortunate. But
yeah.
It's incredibly emotional. I like the way they revealed things, how their conversation went down, and how it empowered
her.
That
was nice. I like that.
Like that.
Did any of you think that there was a chance he would survive the film?
Absolutely not.
It'd be like the Peggy Carter.
With the time frame that it was, with 1918 and how it... No. He would have been dead.
Justice League, they go visit him and he's like old and on his deathbed.
Yeah, he would have been
about.
Dead by BVS, right? But theoretically, there was, you know, World War II.
Right.
You know, and things like that. So part of me was wondering if they were going to save him for a possible sequel.
Interesting.
I mean, they could have, but...
Because that's the world we live in now, right? If your movie does well, you get a sequel.
Right.
And so in my mind, it's like, well, if you're going to bid for a sequel, you probably want,
you know,
Chris
whole,
Pine
yeah.
to come back. So
truth be told, in the comics, which
he's died before, and he's come back before,
his character's only important to her origin. There's really not much else after that. And aside from Steve Trevor, she's really only had romantic feelings for Batman in the Justice League cartoon. Yes. And really only there. And then Superman in the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, she's been kind of this lone wolf. And every once in a while, they hint at the fact that she's had a relationship with a female, but they've never full-on done it. They've just briefly said that she and Power Girl have had feelings for each other or something. So it's... Steve Trevor is very important to this story, but not to anything else of hers. So it's... I like what he did and how it happened and what he means to her going forward. It makes her character more interesting.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
He was good for the story. He was used very well, but, you know, I don't know what they would have done with him going forward.
As most damsels, they exist to serve the other character, and he got more than the average damsel. White men do. But at the same time...
Yeah. No, I just figured it was safe to keep him alive. You know, to be able to say, your next movie stars Gal Gadot and Chris Pine is a nice thing for marketing.
Right. They could still do that with flashbacks.
Absolutely. Yeah,
they could.
The thing is, there's not like a lot of time. You see almost everything that happens in that amount of time between the two of them, so they can't add stuff that happens.
Yeah.
That would be weird.
Unless Barry breaks the time thing.
There you go.
Don't do it,
Barry. Did I go too far?
Don't do it, Barry.
So what did you guys think of the bad guys? The baddies. There were kind of three bad guys.
Yeah, yes. Kind of for all three of them.
Kind of for all three of them?
That's the thing.
Do you have a favorite of the three?
Yes.
I don't know. I think three-thirds make a whole. And so all together, they serve their purpose. But when you look at each of them individually, they kind of suck. And that's not really how I wanted Ares to go down. But Ludendorff and... I mean, Dr. Maru was cool for what she was. She was a female chemist
in the
1910s. But
she was nicknamed Dr. Poison because she just enjoys killing people.
But she didn't get too much expanded on, which sucks because I thought, like, just on the surface, she has the most interesting background. And you're like... Well, let's use her as sidekick number one for German Nazi guy.
Well, she's the sidekick of the sidekick, really.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's the problem is how do you develop three villains who have completely different agendas?
Yeah.
You underdevelop all of them.
Yep. But she survived, so she could be back for Wonder Woman 2.
Depending on where that...
Right. We don't know where that's going to be fitting in, but, you know.
If I had to pick a favorite, it was going to be Ludendorff. I thought that he was the most... well-developed of the three and the most formidable of the three.
So I'm giggling because the entire time I thought of him as his Wolverine Origins character.
That's what I did too.
Striker. And so I'm combining the two and the two together make a full villain. Like...
So I didn't see X-Men Origins Wolverine. Was he
was Striker.
Houston was in that? That was actually he was Striker?
He was young Striker.
So that's kind of fun.
Danny Houston played young Brian Cox.
Okay. Weird. That's super confusing.
I know, right? Considering they're only like 2 years apart.
But I do think his character was the most well-developed and the most formidable for Diana, you know. Because
she thought that he was Ares.
She thought that he was Ares. He really would have wanted to kill her. He doesn't need her, right? Ares kind of falls into the monologuing bad guy trope where it's like, come on, join me, we'll be buddies kind of thing. It has
Ares
never worked in any movie ever.
Also did the exact same thing Zod did where he changed the landscape to show Wonder Woman their world, like what the world could be if he just let she go. Just stepped out of the way.
Yeah.
And I was like, didn't we see this before?
Mm.
Yeah.
Just saying. What was up with that gas that he kept ingesting? Like, they didn't explain why it gave him superpowers.
Is that the DC's version of
It's the Tesseract, right?
Yeah. Like,
it's Bane's venom, right? Like, what the hell?
That's what the fan theory is, that she created a very early version of Venom.
I think it's really quiet, but you're making all these faces, right?
It's the injustice.
You guys
it's the pills from Injustice,
do it,
right?
Do it.
It is. No, they swallow those.
This is a precursor to that.
They just sniff them and they're good to go.
All right, Ryan, what do you...
So, if Dr. Poison or whatever her name was, super overcooked, and just, I mean, that she was like, mustache twirling villain in the corner in a movie that didn't, okay. wasn't full of cheesy stuff.
I wasn't sure what Overcooked
and,
meant.
And the fact that it was truly Ares that gave her the formula to get the poison right undermines her as a character. So the fact that she's a brilliant female scientist doesn't really mean anything because right. it was Ares doing it the whole time. Ludendorff, fine, whatever. Typical, like, German villain way before they were Nazis and they were just Germans that sounded mean. you know, okay. He was also pretty cheesy, but of the three, I mean, he was the least lame, I guess. He was at least had some menacing thing to him. And then Lupin, or whatever his name from Harry Potter, you know, as the god of war. Like, that's who I picture perfectly in my head every time I think god of war. Let's cast Remus Lupin, or whatever his name was, in Harry Potter.
That wasn't
boom, uncasted, and he's going to have a mustache, because why not?
The fact that he didn't change physically when he became Ares.
That's what pissed me off.
Thank yeah.
Because yes.
even in the flashbacks, he's like super spindly dude with a mustache.
Yes. And that didn't work for me. Because no. yeah, he is not a physically formidable looking person.
No.
Until the armor shows up and then magically he has all these muscles and, you know, is a huge dude.
That's just the armor. It's like your muscle suit, you know?
Well, yeah. So. Well, that's not a suit. That's what I actually look like.
That's
not obviously.
Yeah, the sick.
That was rude.
He's worn it on the show before.
Listen.
No, his name is Riceps, okay?
Yeah, that's where I got my nickname from.
But I agree. When I picture Ares, I picture what he looked like in the comics with these red eyes and really dark skin. And, you know, very godlike. When I saw this man, I'm like, Remus is alive again.
Yeah, it's like, how is this even
going to stack up to Wonder Woman like, at all? No. But I do agree with, like, this whole mustache. I don't like his mustache at all in this.
It's fine. Like, it was in style at the time. So,
yes,
I mean,
but when he's a god of war, he should have had the same mustache.
I talked to somebody else about this, that I think that, you know, I was like, in the flashback, he has the mustache, too. And it's
yes.
like, okay, so he just always has a 1917, you know, in
era
style
mustache.
Mustache.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
It's the same problem I have whenever they do Savage, is that, you know, the Vandal Savage. These guys never age and never really change what they look
like.
Well,
he's supposed to look like a caveman. Like
somehow nobody ever notices this. You know, so Ares would have been thousands of years old.
Oh, yeah.
And
you would think he would have looked like a Greek statue, is essentially what you would think of, because he's a god, and all the gods look like Greek statues. That's how you... that's how you see him.
He's the one god that didn't work out.
You know who would have...
He's just gifted with the strength.
Somebody who would have been great, who would have been imposing, but is also
anybody
a,
not
aged
in the Harry Potter universe.
I was going to say Hugh Jackman. He has an accent. Sure. He's aged a bit, but he's still in great shape, and he could have been the imposing guy. But
how weird would that?
Also,
that would be very weird.
He's out of his contract, guys. He can do whatever.
I'm not
he
talking
wants.
About legal like, stuff. Just like you're talking about how it's a little weird that you know Houston was Stryker
yeah.
and Wolverine.
No,
Origins.
No.
You're actually talking about putting Wolverine in the movie.
I didn't say it was weird. I said that his character in Wolverine Origins was underdeveloped, and this one was underdeveloped,
gotcha.
So two villains equals one. Like, that's...
See, what I would have loved, and this is just my fan casting, I would have loved to have seen Idris Elba as the God of War, because...
You guys just want to see Idris Elba as everybody in
everything.
The entire...
I think
he would
be a really good God of War.
I mean, the fact that they didn't cast him as Wonder Woman, I think, was a huge mistake.
Diversify people.
A white man would have been better, obviously.
Obviously.
Well, actually...
But then they would have had to have white men showings, and it just would have been a...
Yeah, it would have been this
horrible.
Huge drama.
Instead of Wine Watch, we would have gotten Period Watch. It would have been awful.
I was hoping somebody noticed the pill thing, too, because, like... It says this will bring you your strength back. It's like, okay, so was he like Superman in the past? Like,
explain this.
He has this weird, like,
and then you find out that not one scene was deleted, that Patty Jenkins kept everything in the film, and you're like, well.
There's a couple we probably could have lived without, Patty. You might need to learn to cut some stuff.
I think part of the issue there for me is more of, if you have this ability to basically make super soldiers...
Yeah, give it to the entire German
why
army.
Why not make super soldiers, right? Yeah. Then you don't need a gas
to kill
everybody.
She has like this
little cup
of pills. She's like, I made these for you. Okay, why don't we just start mass producing and win the whole war, because now everybody can fight Wonder Woman.
Right.
And she's not just killing defenseless German soldiers that have no chance against her.
Well, then how do you guys feel about that fan theory of that she created a very primal version of Venom?
I think it's stupid.
I mean, you're talking, so it has to sit around for like 60 years
that's
and barely develop at all. I think that's just people wanting to
connect something.
Yeah. Everybody wants to see connections now. Right. There doesn't have to be a connection.
This movie didn't really have that many connections, which was wonderful.
Yeah, I saw a peasant wearing a diamond pattern. That means she's Harley Quinn's like great-great-great-great-grandmother.
Now, I will say there is a theory that during the beginning of the film, when Diana's mother is telling her the story of the gods and they're showing kind of that animated portion, that Poseidon's trident looks pretty much exactly like the one that Aquaman has in the Justice League previews.
That's fine. If Aquaman ends up inheriting Poseidon's trident, fine. That's not...
I think it's cool.
That's cool.
I mean, that's not a huge stretch for me.
Is it not Poseidon's trident? Because I always thought this whole entire time it was Poseidon's trident. Is it not?
It's different.
It varies.
The issue with
its size also changes. Sometimes it's got four prongs or five or three.
The issue with DC Comics is they've had so many reinventions that you can't keep track anymore. There's been multiple origin stories for every single character now, and how they get certain things always changes. So that's a fine little Easter egg. I
thought it'd be cool.
Yeah, I thought it'd be okay.
It's not going to hurt or really help the story at all. It's fine.
Yeah. How did you guys feel about Themyscira?
It's beautiful.
The best CGI was on that island.
And it was a real place. They actually filmed at actual locations there. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just all CGI.
No, the CGI was like on the sky to make it always pretty and blue. It wasn't like...
Though it also shares the worst CGI scene in the movie.
Is it the one that I'm thinking of, too?
When young Diana jumps off the side.
Oh, yeah, that was horrible.
The green screen behind her is some of the worst green screen I can think of. And for a 2017 movie...
Come out
movie,
this year.
That's pretty bad green screen. No, come We've on. Seen it twice now.
We've rewatched Lord of the Rings, and there's bad stuff in that one.
Lord of the Rings is 10, 15 years old now.
My point is, you can't say worst green screen ever.
Didn't say that I can think of. Because it's easily avoidable. Because it's a shot of her falling, and you easily could have shot it from a different angle, or
just thrown the child off the cliff,
or not actually like you don't need
wow,
to.
Dude.
Well, there's stunt child for that.
Yeah, exactly. There's a harness. It's okay.
That's what Andy Serkis is for.
Yeah.
He's mocap, not stunt. Get it right.
He does both.
He does not. Chill.
Anyway. But you could have, shown her jump off the side, and then you can cut to, her
just
being grabbed,
right?
You don't need the slow motion falling face first shot.
Of her feeling like she's falling in far distance.
Because I think it's the angle that makes that green screen look as bad as it is.
It's pointing up at her, isn't it?
And, and if you had pulled that back in some way or done it from a different angle, I think you could have meshed that in a way that wouldn't have stood out so much.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how badass Antiope is.
I did not realize that was Princess Buttercup until I
totally
saw the memes,
right?
The memes
White.
Afterwards.
She's so cool.
The whole time I was thinking, okay, there's like three Amazons here that are believable for me. And she was one of them. And I had no clue. So when I found that, I was like, I just couldn't speak. Because it was such a different character than the only other thing I think I've ever seen her in. Noticed it was
Robin
her.
Wright. Has been on House of Cards for the last like few years now.
Yeah.
And she recently said she's not coming back because she found out that Kevin Spacey's pay is so much higher than hers, that are in the same amount of episodes, usually same amount of scenes. He doesn't have that much bigger of a role. So she's out. She's done. And her ties to House of Cards made her actually like miss out on the Wonder Woman audition. Otherwise, she probably would have been Hippolyta. But Patty Jenkins created the role of Antiope for her so she could have her in there. Because when Robin Wright said, no, I really want to do this. I'm going to get in shape. Let's do this. She was like, all right, we can do this.
Yeah.
So
it is kind of funny. In the first viewing, I didn't realize that was her until after the fact. So in the second viewing, it was a little distracting because that was all I could kind of see was that it's Robin Wright now. And that was just such a stark difference. And the only two characters I really know her as. It was really interesting. She was awesome.
Yeah.
I thought all the Amazons were beautifully done. Mm-hmm. I mean, they used, for the extras, they used real life women athletes.
Yes.
They had women of color as Amazons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every single Amazon had a unique look, a unique kind of, headband. you know, they
not all of them had headbands.
No, but I did like
but
that
when they did,
all,
they had unique ones.
They didn't all wear literally the exact same thing. Like
they were not cookie cutter.
Yeah,
and they did Amazons. Acknowledge that there's the queen, there's senators, there's mm-hmm. generals, and army. Like,
yes,
it's a complex society.
There's a tutor. You know, it's a full functioning. Not everybody's a warrior mm-hmm. all the time. Like they're all trained as warriors, but they still have their army and they still have their government and. So it definitely, just in the first 30 minutes, I think we're mm-hmm. on
for sure.
Themyscira, maybe 45, goes through and explains the entire
culture and civilization, basically.
I think the only one that stood out to me the most that it was not believable to me was Hippolyta. I thought, like, the scene when they're on the beach and she does, like, this weird 360 thing. Like, okay, I don't buy her as Queen of the Amazons. Antiope should have been the
queen. Well, that's why she's the general.
I guess, yes, but I mean, so. You think of a warrior people like that. Maybe being queen and a
mother made her soft.
Yeah, maybe I just didn't buy her as a badass warrior, but not even a little bit. I don't know. Maybe that was just me, but she stood out in the group of like with the professional boxer that's like getting you know stuff smashed on her and not even moving, and you know, all the other ones that are doing this crazy awesome stuff, and she just rides a horse around with a robe most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely clear to me that Antiope would have been like superior in any battle, right? But I felt like that was just kind of on purpose.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like a warrior, a people that was that were warriors would want their strongest one to be the queen, you know, so, I would think. That was just me. I don't follow the comic books. Maybe that's not the case in the comic books.
It's possible, like, we don't know exactly how the queen became...
Well, she led them into the revolt.
That was what they said
in the movie.
Yeah.
But then again, you know... What does that mean that she led the revolt? Does that mean she was literally leading the charge? Or, was she the tactician who came up with the plan and then Antiope and her people executed it?
Right.
I don't know what that means. And maybe that's the point. Maybe she has a better strategic mind.
So what do you guys think of the fact that a lot of people are pointing out that if Antiope knew Diana was a god, why did she take the bullet for her?
Yeah, so...
The bullets still hurt. I mean, Patty Jenkins has come out and said that bullets are not, like, she's not immune to bullets. She can't get shot like Superman and survive. And
That was kind of my thought on it, too. Yeah. Like,
she can still be wounded by things, but not...
Otherwise, why does she bother deflecting the bullets, you know?
Well, and that's the thing. If you notice, like, when she's being, like, worked on and, you know, and they take the bandages off, like, she's healed, she gets injured.
Yeah.
She just regenerates very quickly.
And that was kind of my explanation, too, but if anybody wasn't behind it here, I just wanted to hear your thought on it. I think it's a silly thing to assume. If this is the first time they're seeing these weapons, they don't know what can kill and what can't, and...
And that's the thing. I don't think Antiope knew to what extent her powers were because Diana was never allowed to explore those powers, right? So what does it mean if she is a god or part god or whatever the case may be? What kind of abilities does she have? Because gods have died and we don't know what these weapons are. So for me, it makes sense that you're trying to protect, as the general, you're trying to protect
your
people.
It's just an instinctual thing.
That's
her job. Trying to protect the one weapon because she knows Ares is there. She knows Ares is lurking somewhere. If you're trying to protect that one weapon...
I think it's more than that. I think this is Diana.
That's also her aunt.
Yes.
Look at the Spartans. Like, the Spartans would die... to die in battle was a glorious death, and they would protect the person right next to them, right? It's with anything they had. And I feel like this is the same culture. Whether or not Ares is a looming threat, she knew that, you know, somebody that she had raised, basically, and had trained and everything was... about to die, and so, you know, she doesn't know that she was, you know, a part god or whatever. She just wants to keep her alive. And
yeah,
absolutely.
I do want to talk about one thing. I know we're getting towards the end here, so there is something I really want to talk about. In comic book movies,
yes,
there's been less than a handful of scenes that have moved me emotionally so much to where I just constantly think about it when I think about that movie. One of them was Spider-Man 2 with the train scene with Peter Parker. Watchmen had the scene with Rorschach and the dogs and the guy that killed the little girl. That one maybe isn't shared between all of us. But and there's a couple others. The Wonder Woman scene with her from the beginning of the trenches through the entire rest of that scene was one of the best scenes I've ever seen in a comic book movie.
I agree. Like, 100%.
I wouldn't say this movie is the best comic book movie I've ever seen, but that scene in itself is...
It's beautiful. Very
beautiful company.
That reveal of her full costume, of her full powers, of the way she says, like, responds, he says no man will cross it, and she doesn't take the Eowyn, like, well, I'm not a man kind of thing. She just says, but this is what I'm going to do, and she steps up, and she just, I start crying, like,
both times,
because it's very, like, intense to watch that, and it doesn't let up until that church comes crumbling down the village.
It's a beautifully shot scene.
I think the No Man's Land part of that was the best part. Yes, it keeps going until there, but, like, just probably that part doesn't move me as much as just, like, absolutely, when she's walking up out and crossing No Man's Land the very first time.
And
then,
like, that scene, everybody inspired by her.
Well, because the No Man's Land part of it is the proof of who she is, whereas all the fighting stuff that happens after that is just kind of amping up her abilities.
Right.
Like, you're already sold. If you're not sold on it, by that point, they're never going to sell you on it, right? So now they can have fun and do some fun action sequences where she's just beating the crap out of people. But the No Man's Land scene, the way it's shot with, you know, slow motion and normal motion and just, you know, mainly focusing on her and rarely showing the weapons themselves, it's a really well done scene. And this thing was shot in February.
And she was 5 months pregnant for the reshoots for it.
Like, it is a cold scene,
little
light. You know,
she had green screen tape on her belly.
She did.
They almost cut the scene.
Yeah.
They weren't sure they were going to be able to pull it off given the context of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to have to come up with a different way to do the reveal. I mean, and now we're talking about how it's the best scene of the movie, one of the best scenes in a comic book movie.
I think one of the best scenes in the new DC movies for sure.
Well, it is the best scene of all the new DC movies.
Absolutely.
There's nothing in my mind that can even come close.
No, I mean, I'm shaking my head like people on the podcast can see me. Well,
the closest thing to it that I can think of, and it's still a pretty wide gap, is when Clark flies for the first time at the Fortress of Solitude and the ground shakes beneath
him.
And
yes, it was pretty, but it didn't move me emotionally.
Correct.
That's what I'm more worried
about.
Yeah, it's a beautiful scene.
That's because Clark in that movie didn't move me emotionally until the very end when I saw him snap the neck. And I'm not saying that was a good point, but at least that's where I became emotional. And up until then, I was very like, this dude's an angry vanilla.
I mean, to be fair, though, this was the fourth live-action Superman we had had. We know that he's going to fly.
Right.
Right. We know that that's going to happen. Anybody sitting in that theater who thought for a minute that Superman wasn't going to fly... I'd like to talk to you.
No, you wouldn't.
They must have watched Smallville for 10 seasons.
He just hovers over his bed when he sleeps. But for Wonder Woman, a lot of people haven't read her comic books, didn't see the Linda Carter TV show, maybe didn't watch the Justice League cartoons, and don't know anything really about her. That is a very different scene. It's a war scene. It's a World War One scene. Like, it's kind of funny, like the way Box Office Mojo categorizes the movie, it's a World War One movie. So it's the number one opening weekend of a World War One movie.
Yeah, I mean, they're not wrong.
You know, but like, so it's a different context.
Can you name any other World War One movies? Like, I can name about 10 World War Two.
Yeah. The list was only 16 movies long. So...
Nobody wants to watch the assassination of Franz Ferdinand.
No, but the point is more just the context isn't there for everybody. Why the Man of Steel flying scene is a beautiful scene.
It is. It was very beautifully shot.
It was expected. Right, where this was not necessarily expected by people, at least not in the way it was shot.
I had no idea they were going to do something like that, but I'm completely with you, Ryan. It's super emotional, very beautiful, completely well done to watch her cross that uncrossable land. Mm-hmm.
The part that got me was, yes, that was symbolic in what it was, but like seeing everybody behind her.
Yeah, they're all like, oh, let's go.
Going, we have, you know, Steve Trevor and the other...
her little group, and then
the rest of the soldiers all come up, and I mean that's to have something be that good that so all these people are willing to run up and support, and they're so inspired. That was what got me, and I mean I really felt that inspiration through most of the movie. I mean I felt, you know, Wonder Woman was somebody that I would want to be around, whereas, you know, Ant-Man, sure, he's funny, but would I hang out with him? Probably not. Or Cap, he's awesome, but, you know, come on. Right. Wonder Woman, like, I would want to be around her because she would make me feel like a better person.
I don't think I would want to hang out with Clark or Bruce. Like,
yeah, they're not fun people.
Drinking beer. Like, right. No, you brood too much. I want to
hang out. Well, Bruce doesn't really hang out anyway.
No, exactly. Right? I want to hang out with a girl who marvels at snow and ice cream and giggles. And
tells everybody how great they are. The ice cream scene, I was a little disappointed because my first movie I watched with Wonder Woman where I really loved it was the animated one where they all kind of came together. I can't remember.
War. Justice League War.
Yeah.
And there was a scene in that where it was in modern times.
She eats the ice cream.
And she like points her sword at the shopkeep. And like, you know, there's this whole interaction. It's just really wonderful, like fish out of water. And that kind of made me fall in love with Wonder Woman as a character. But I was kind of a little disappointed. I'm happy they gave an homage to that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that happened in the comic books. Maybe that's what they're referencing.
There was a, yeah.
But I really wanted that full scene, and when I saw the ice cream, I was like, they're going to do it without the little girl, but they're going to do it.
Right. Yeah.
And that with the little girl in that animated movie was really important to her character, too.
I love those scenes with her, because the way that she plays Wonder Woman, she plays her with such innocence and such, you know, she has this naive look on, you know,
but just
if I kill Ares, if I kill Ares, then everyone's going to be good again. And she plays that with such gusto, and you believe her, and you see her, you know, talking to the woman with the baby in the trenches, and then you see her go out and fight for people that she doesn't know, but she knows what's happening to them.
It's ridiculous that we have to talk about how amazing and multifaceted she was. She was brave, and she was strong, and she did things that nobody else was going to do, not because she knew she could, but because she knew it was right. And yet, she's also nurturing and caring. She cares about Chief and his people. She cares about Charlie and his PTSD, and she cares about Sammy and his goals in life.
Like, yes.
She cares about Etta and her role for Steve Trevor. Like,
yeah.
She cares about everybody.
She has so much love. That's what she believes in at the very end. She even says, I believe in love.
A normal person. We all have these different sides to us. And
but superheroes don't. It sucks
that
we don't
get to see all that.
Superheroes don't. I mean, think about the big superheroes in the movies now. Iron Man doesn't have that type of emotional depth for most people.
No.
Right? He put on an invincible metal suit and launched some missiles.
Yeah.
Right? And I love Iron Man. The first Iron Man movie is freaking awesome. Right?
That had a really good reveal, too, when he's in the small town and he just lands there in the first...
Superhero landing!
Yeah.
In the red and gold suit. That was really fun.
But, you know, he's not that type of multifaceted character. Batman has never been type of character. Superman, maybe sometimes.
All of his movies together.
You know, but most of our superheroes don't get that. They're the action star.
Yeah.
Right? That's what their job is. Their job is to run into fire.
All that depth on top of each other, layer after layer, in one film. And none of it felt forced to me. At least none of it coming from her.
I agree. So... they've already said that Patty Jenkins is signed on to do Wonder Woman 2 with Gal. What do you guys want to see in a Wonder Woman 2? Patty said that maybe she'll take it to World War II. She said maybe she'll take it back to a modern, more, you know, setting, 80s, 90s.
Unfortunately, it all kind of depends on where else they go, where Justice League takes everybody, where Aquaman takes everybody, because those are currently filming.
Mm-hmm.
Flash will be filming soon, too. I assume they're going to ramp up this and figure out a date for it sooner or later, but it would be cool to see a female villain. We don't get those very much.
I'm sure Cheetah will show up.
Cheetah or Cersei.
That's what we talked about. Good.
Yeah. Donna Troy was made a villain in New 52, and it was actually some of the best Donna Troy stories in a very long time, so that would be kind of cool too.
I do want to see it in World War II. I kind of want it to be, and I know it's cliche and people will probably hate on me for it, but I kind of want like her Empire Strikes Back kind of moment where we see why she gives up and why she kind of goes into hiding to show us why she's who she is in BVS. Because who she is at the end of Wonder Woman is a very different character than who we get in BVS.
Right.
I'm curious why.
I think it's because Steve dies. I think it's because of the end of...
See, I don't think it's because of Steve. I think
she
ends
with the whole, like, they are love. And
they're, she thinks what he did almost redeems humanity in a way for her. Because he showed her what they can do.
Right.
Right? So I think it's probably what happens in World War II. The fact that she's defeated Ares, the fighting has stopped, and the war is over, and then a worse war comes just not even, 30 years later.
Just going to throw this out there.
Not 20 years
later. She has a very, it's not popular, but a very powerful story of her rescuing Vietnamese women from American and Chinese soldiers who were raping them in the Vietnam War, and she could do that and give up on the world after.
Yeah, they're not going to do that in a movie. I don't think the DCEU is going to do that.
But I could totally see her doing World War II, seeing the concentration camps, seeing what's going on, and she just sees what humanity is doing to another and just gives up there. That could totally be.
Maybe she liberates a few camps.
World War II because we've already had it. A hero do World
yeah,
War II.
There's a lot
I
of parallels in
new.
This already to the Captain America First
but
Avenger
there really, there really aren't, though. It's a war movie.
I'm kind of with you on that one.
What are the parallels? It's a war movie.
Well, they're both period pieces. They're both the Germans. Yes. They're both, they both have a self-sacrifice in the end.
Hang on.
Oh, look at that.
So, first off, they're not just fighting Germans. They're fighting
Turks.
Turks, thank you. And Ottomans and things like that. But a period piece implies anything that isn't present day.
Okay, they're both World War movies set in similar circumstances.
So we're not allowed to tell war stories anymore? Okay.
I think Wonder Woman strives and does really well in war. But there's a ton of worldly conflicts we can choose from. And maybe you don't have to do that part of the Vietnam War, but the Vietnam War affected way more than just America. So
I'm not denying that.
Right. I know you know history. But
I just think
saying,
that if you look
there's other time periods we could pick.
If you look at the 20th century and you want to say, where would Wonder Woman have lost her faith in humanity?
I would say
that World War II is probably a pretty reasonable spot to pick.
It is.
It included the most countries. It included the most deaths. It included some of the the most extreme political views and attacks and things of that nature.
Both sides
we had nukes. Nukes were dropped. You could have us dropping nukes on Japan.
It's past 9 o'clock and now we're getting into history arguments.
Well, no, what do you think us dropping the atomic bomb on civilian cities would have done to Wonder Woman?
Looking back with a very jaded political viewpoint, yes, you are 100% correct. But back then, people still talk about that as like this fun American heyday of rescuing the world from itself, and
I think we've been talking to different people.
I think that this movie, the strength of this movie is that the character made you feel good, seeing her hope, seeing inspiring people. The last thing I want to do is end a movie with her being depressed and giving up on humanity.
Boom.
I would rather see her in like the 80s with like big hair, just because I love 80s movies. I mean, honestly, I don't really care where the sequel goes because I'm going to go see it. And I don't really want it to be one that depresses me at the end. I don't want another Logan. I want a movie where I can come out as good as I did about humanity and superhero movies.
I want to see her snap Maxwell Lord's neck. The Peter Facinelli version from Supergirl.
Supergirl. I'm good with that.
I hated it.
I think that if you do it in the future after Justice League, you run the same risk that Thor the Dark World had, where something really bad has to happen and you have to ask yourself, where is everybody else?
Okay. comic books have been doing that for a long time.
And
so.
I think that it's a problem for those movies. So I think if you do something prior to Justice League, then it makes perfect sense why Batman and Supes don't show up. But if you do something post Justice League that is country ending, where is Flash? How come he's not lending a hand?
I think we all understand your point. I we get it. I would go see that movie, but I just don't want to see a movie. Everything you said makes sense. I'm not arguing that at all.
Any final thoughts then on Wonder Woman?
Go see it.
So great.
Do you guys want to do our grades? We usually do a letter grade here for our films. Ryan, why don't you start us off?
It's not as good as the best Marvel movies, but it's better than the majority of the Marvel movies. Okay. So I'd put it probably like a solid B. Maybe an argument could be made for a B+. I'm in there for sure. It was a really good movie, and I really enjoyed it.
Ian?
A-, for sure. No, it's... I mean, I, you know, I love DC more than Marvel. Everyone knows that. And my big thing, I mean, I thought Suicide Squad was, you know, the best thing that happened for DC. But Wonder Woman just knocks us out of the park.
All of these would disagree with you.
Yes, but I mean, and you know that I love Harley Quinn, and she was, you know, kind of the center of Suicide Squad and whatever, but Wonder Woman can kick Harley's ass any day. I don't care.
Ray?
This is full on get my heart out, and you've heard me all critique it. It's still an A for me. It's my favorite superhero movie. I'm not saying it's the best. Critical eye, it's not, but favorite, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So,
if you guys are fans of the show and have listened before, I'm very bad at picking favorites. I can't really do it. I have a hard time with that because I watch so many movies and I love so many of them. I give Wonder Woman an A as well. I think it's one of, if not the best of the DC movies. The Dark Knight gives it a run for its money. So I think, you know, it's probably The Dark Knight edges it out. If you want to include Watchmen in the conversation, then we have a very interesting top three. But until Rebirth, Watchmen was not part of the same universe. So, you know, there's some complications there. But it's an amazing movie, so I give it an A. Go see it. Find out for yourselves. It's got a 93 on Rotten Tomatoes, an 8.3 on IMDb, 76 on Metacritic. You know, but
Metacritic is really harsh. Look at the other ones.
Yeah, they're really harsh. But, you know, it's obviously the highest scored out of the four DCEU films.
Yes.
Metacritic's also the only one that doesn't let fans chime in. IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes do.
Yeah. So, you know, there you go. Those are our ratings. Next week, we're going to fan cast our Dark Universe.
Yep. We're going to have some fun being silly with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan may or may not be able to join us next week. We'll see what happens there. And check out our show, Costume Couture, on YouTube. Go to heroespodcast.com, click on the YouTube link. On Mondays, we release Costume Couture. Do you guys want to talk about your next episode?
Watch us drink.
There's a huge reason why we didn't discuss the costumes here, and it's because we're going to do that heavily in our next episode.
Right, so tune in Monday for that, and you can catch their other episodes. You guys have talked Todrick Hall, and
Beauty
and the Beast. You've done her universe.
Yes.
So some really cool topics. Yeah. So go check that stuff out. And you can check out our third and final show, Gamer Heroes Podcast, which you can find every Friday, a new episode. This past week, we talked fighting games, including Injustice 2, Ultra Street Fighter 2, Super Smash Brothers, and some Nintendo Switch news.
Did you guys know it was our final show? Like, I was going to start recording, like, Food Heroes and Dildo Heroes. And all of a sudden...
Can I be a guest on Dildo Heroes?
You're my co-host.
I have a lot of things to say. And I've been called a dildo on YouTube, I think.
Please. So. Make sure you tune in this week, though, for our E3 predictions.
Woo!
E3 is next week, so we're going to predict what we think is going to happen.
I predict there's
going to
be a gold PS4 that releases.
It's a good 49. Prediction.
I predict there's going to be Battlefront 2 gameplay.
Ooh, interesting. Interesting.
I predict special...
Game stuff.
With controllers.
I'm going to give you my
special tiki mask with every purchase of Crash Bandicoot.
There you go.
That'd be so cool.
I'll give you my big prediction now. Even though Nintendo already did their Pokemon Direct earlier today and it did not say this, I still think they're going to announce Pokemon Star for the Nintendo Switch.
I'm okay with this.
I don't know what that means, but sure.
So check us all out, heroespodcast.com, at heroespodcast on Twitter and Facebook. Check us out on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. We'll catch you guys next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.